court is now sitting. May God save the state of Texas in this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has four causes on its oral submission docket. We will hear these in order and complete them before our lunch break, which will be a little late. And in each case, we've allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral argument. The petitioners may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of the court. These arguments are being recorded, and you can purchase a tape of them from the clerk of our court. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioners in Charles Mayhew, Sr. and others versus the town of Sunnyvale.
May it please the court, Mr. Seaman will present arguments to the petitioner. The petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. I represent the petitioner in this cause, a 9-year-old zoning case that challenges the actions of the town of Sunnyvale in regard to the property owner's property in January of 1987. After summary judgment was reversed by the Court of Appeals, the trial court, the Merrill Judge, Merrill Hartman, presiding, held a 3-week trial, 33 witnesses, most of them experts, 133 exhibits. Judge Hartman rendered judgment in favor of the petitioner, the plaintiff, on 5 separate constitutional grounds and awarded a variety of relief. The town appealed, and after 2 years, the Court of Appeals issued an order reversing the trial court decision and rendering a dismissal of the cause of action on ripeness grounds. In response to a petition for rehearing, the court went further and addressed the merits and reversed on factual sufficiency grounds and rendered a judgment of dismissal. We submit to this court that the Court of Appeals erred and erred grievously. One, in regard to the legal doctrine of rightness which was applied. Two, in reversing and rendering on what is essentially a factual question, that is the rightness, application of rightness, that the court erred when it reversed and rendered rather than reversed and remanded on the factual sufficiency grounds. And we believe this matter at the minimum should be remanded to Judge Hartman.
I would appreciate if you'd clarify what the factual issues are. We've said that we're reviewing the constitutionality of statutes or ordinances that we would review de novo. The factual basis, or at least the upon which the statute would be determined constitutional or not, or whether there was legitimate governmental objective, that sort of thing.
Your Honor, I would submit to you that there are three kinds of questions: questions of fact, questions of law, and mixed questions of fact and law. When the mixed question of fact and law depends on essentially factual circumstances, we believe the traditional deference to the trial court's judgment, having heard the witnesses, listening to the credibility, particularly in land use cases, this is important. These cases turn primarily on expert witnesses who present themselves before the court and give their opinion. And in order to judge between what are inevitably conflicting opinions, the court must weigh the credibility of their evidence and assess that. When an appellate court looks at the bare words of the record, that credibility is stripped away from the mere words of rationality. And we submit that is why these essentially factual questions, although they are concededly questions of mixed fact and law, are entitled to substantial deference because of their essential factual dependency. The Supreme Court of the United States has taught us repeatedly that in these constitutional cases, they are essentially ad hoc factual inquiries as to whether the property rights that are involved have been adversely affected contrary to the Constitution. And so I would submit that these essentially factual mixed questions of fact and law are entitled to the deference.
And what are those facts here? I mean,
the essential facts in this case are that the decision to deny the application for development approval, notwithstanding the fact that it satisfied each and every criterion of the ordinance, every single witness who testified, including the town's witnesses, including the town's experts, the town's planner testified that the application met each and every criterion. And that, we believe, is factual evidence that their decision was arbitrary and capricious, that it failed to substantially advance a legitimate public purpose, and it denied equal protection of the laws, and my client was entitled to relief. The other factual question is whether our client had an economically viable use. And the uncontradicted evidence in the record, including the town's plan, the town's appraiser, was that the property as zoned had no economically viable use. He testified, their appraiser testified, that the highest and best use of this property was to hold it in hopes that the city might sometime in the future change the zoning. And when our appraiser testified, he testified that he considered every use permitted under the existing zoning ordinance and found that the property had no economically viable use.
You can't build a home on the 1 acre lots?
The test is not whether you can build one home. The question is there an economically viable use? The uncontradicted record is that you can absorb in the marketplace 8 single-family homes on 1 acre lots per year. There are 8,000 acres of vacant land in the town of Sunnyvale zoned for 1 unit per acre. If our client were able to capture his pro rata share of the market, it would take 400 years for him to realize economic value from his property. The fact of the matter is that their appraiser testified that no prudent investor would pay anything for this land.
So are you saying that whenever someone buys a piece of property, regardless of where that property may be, they're subject to zoning restrictions, that if they can establish that the use of the property, the condition was when they owned it, was not the most economically viable, then they would have a cause of action similar to yours?
No, Your Honor. The principle which I believe has been clearly enunciated both by this Court and by the United States Supreme Court is that the Constitution preserves to every property owner a minimum economically viable use. I believe that has been proven and demonstrated beyond peradventure. And that's what a property owner is entitled to have. That is essentially, the Supreme Court tells us, an ad hoc factual inquiry.
And having a house on 1 acre is not an economically viable use of the property?
No, Your Honor, because the Supreme Court's holding comes from the concept of justice and fairness, and that there are certain burdens that should be borne by the public at large through the power of eminent domain and the payment of just compensation, or burdens that ought to be borne by an individual property owner. And that involves the effect on the property owner is measured to the benefit. There is a reciprocity advantage that is the foundation of zoning, and when that reciprocity advantage is so far out of whack, the ability to sell and use 2 single-family units a year for 1,196 acres, I would submit to you that the balance is so far out of whack as to be clearly within the standards enunciated by the U.S. Supreme Court in the Penn Central case.
Let's just assume hypothetically for a second that your side were to prevail on the rightness issue. With regard to the other issues, and primarily the takings issue, because of the nature of the Court of Appeals ruling, would it be necessary to remand this case to the trial court because the Court of Appeals said there was insufficient evidence? Or would this case in its current posture be such that a ruling could be made as a matter of law with regard to the takings issue?
And no, Your Honor, because the Court of Appeals clearly rejected the legal insufficiency arguments of the town and decided it on factual insufficiency, it is our position that under Texas law this matter must be remanded to the trial court. And at a bare minimum, that's the relief entitled.
So you're not even requesting a rendition of judgment in your favor?
Your Honor, I would tell you the plain fact is that as an officer of this court and the nation, I am distressed by a circumstance where a matter has been pending before the appellate courts of this land for over 2,000 days, and the possibility of further remand to the Court of Appeals with whatever disposition and time unknown is very distressing to me as a member of the bar. And candidly, if this court has jurisdiction, I would urge you in any way to reverse and affirm Judge Hartman's decision. But I recognize the circumstances. But justice delayed is justice denied. It's not a trite circumstance. This property has been economically sterilized since 1973, and there's been pending litigation since 1987.
Mr. Seaman, let me real quickly what was the zoning on the property, or was there any zoning on the property when Mayhew started buying up the acreage?
When the Mayhew first started buying the property, it wasn't even a town. Mr. Mayhew was, I think the record shows, involved in the corporation of the town. Its zoning was changed in 1973 to one-acre zoning in response to a problem with septic tanks in some existing subdivisions.
And so since 73 forward, it's been one house. Now, there are some homes there that are 3 2-1/8 acres, some of the earlier.
There are some larger lot homes.
And so did Mayhew buy any property after 73?
Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor. There was additional land that was assembled at the principal farmstead in the early 80s.
Then, going back to Judge Abbott's question, can a property owner, can a person go buy property that has zoning on it and claim a constitutional right's been violated if they can simply prove that it has a higher and better use than the current zoning on it? Have they demonstrated a constitutional interest that's been harmed?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that the Mayhew 1 decision made it clear what I believe to be the law of this land is anytime the government exercises police power over private property, property interests are implicated and the Constitution applies, and if there is a right decision, the court has jurisdiction to consider it. We're not claiming
so
the
that is retroactive. So if the decision being complained about happened at some point in the past, a new person could come in, buy the property, and then claim that their rights have been deprived.
No question, Your Honor. I believe the Constitution applies regardless of when you buy the property. I believe that the United States Supreme Court has decided that in a number of cases, Kaiser Aetna being one. The point is that the Constitution does not allow land use regulations to go further than necessary to protect the public health, safety, and welfare. And the Just Compensation Clause preserves to every property owner the right to use their property, except as it needs to be limited by to serve the public health, safety, and welfare.
Was our Cobb decision wrong?
Your Honor, I think to the extent that the profitability, that the word profit is equivalent to economically viable use, then I believe that the case is not consistent with what the United States Supreme Court has taught. If you understand that profit is different, I agree with Todd, that there a property owner is not entitled to a profitable use, but they are entitled to something that's economically viable. Your Honors, I'd like to briefly address the rightness question if I can. I believe this is a court of question of first impression for this court. I think it's a vital question in regard to property rights in Texas. I believe this court should look to the United States Supreme Court's decision, and I believe if you do, you will find that there is a responsible rule and logic that says that once a single meaningful application has been submitted to a local government and they make a final decision in regard to that application, that the matter is ripe for consideration. And I would submit to you that that is the rule this court should establish. There is no requirement in any United States Supreme Court decision that requires reapplication, repeated applications. And I would remind this court, the record is uncontroverted. In this case, it cost $500,000 and a year and a half to go through the development review process. And to suggest, as the Texas Municipal League, that that's an idle exercise that a property owner will do to simply set up a local government, I think is fanciful. To suggest that if the local government doesn't want to defend itself on that denial, that the onus should be on the property owner to get in the barrel again, I think is fundamentally unfair.
Let me ask you a question. I may misunderstand the respondent's argument, but I think it may go something like this, and that is they say that your mistake was, or the mistake on behalf of the Mayhews was, that they sought to change rather than test the zoning restriction, test perhaps by way of variance. Mm-hmm. What's your response to that?
Your Honor, our client applied for the minimum economically viable use and they chose to deny it. At that time, I believe there was a meaningful decision and a final decision and that we were entitled to come to court and test that.
In essence, you were hoping, trying to achieve a different zoning result. In other words, the zoning provided for certain number of acreage per house, you wanted a totally different zoning result instead of approaching it from the other method, which would be seeking some type of variance from that particular zoning requirement.
Your Honor, to try to be clear, the only variance which was available as a deviation from the one-acre zoning was what was called a plan development application. And that plan development application said to the property owner, you apply and we'll consider something greater than one unit per acre.
And that's what you have.
And that's all that's available.
So you're
there
saying
is no variance provision other than that.
You're saying that the PD was a variance.
It is. That's what the town calls it. And that's what it is. And they have characterized it as a rezoning, but that's how Texas municipalities treat plan developments. But, Your Honor, I want to make it absolutely clear that while some of the district courts, the federal district courts and several circuit courts have issued opinions that would lead you to believe that repeated applications are necessary for a land use case to be ripe, I believe if you look at the United States Supreme Court's decisions, you'll find that's not what the Supreme Court has said. In McDonald, Frades and Summer and Williamson County, both of the applications which were found to be insufficient to satisfy the ripeness requirements were, as a matter of fact and law, insufficient before the local government.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Freilich will present argument for the respondents.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm Professor Freilich. I'm honored to be admitted to argue before this court. I'd like to say that this case represents in my opinion, and in the opinion of many people in this state, a speculative malaise of the 80s. Why we really suffered over $500 billion in savings and loan losses on speculative ventures. To meet an upzoning conditional contract of purchase of 3 to 5 times the existing zoning of the current property, which was one unit per acre, or to multiply the population of the town by 5 times from 2,000 to over 15,000 people without adequate public facilities, schools, roads, or other facilities, the Mayhews testified that they would never take less than 3,600 units. Or 3 times the zoning. The Mayhew 1 court rejected summary judgment and said that there were multiple applications between 1 and 3 units per acre. Upon the hearings before the town, it was demonstrated that Mr. Mayhew testified that he would never take less than 3 times the existing zoning. He would never apply for a variance. He would never apply for special uses. And Mr. Seaman says that there were no variances on the property. In point of fact, under Texas law, he's talking about, in their brief, cite no variance from the denial of the rezoning. Of course, there's no variance from the denial of a rezoning. It's a legislative act. But there was a variance before the Board of Adjustment. They had 400 acres of floodplain land, environmentally sensitive land. They could have gotten a variance on that. They could have moved the density from that land and the wetlands over to the existing dry, viable land. They could have asked for densities anywhere between 1 to 3 units per acre. There were special uses allowing shopping centers, office complexes, all of these under the existing law, under the existing zoning, and they had 1 unit per acre.
Counsel, why did the trial court, in your opinion, view the governmental interests advanced by the City of Sunnyvale in denying this application is irrational?
Your Honor, I'd like to show some boards here that I think, number one, would answer that. Number one, on the Taub case, Your Honor, it was very, very clear that the trial court determined that the maximum profitability of this property was 3 to 5 times the local zoning. And as this court said, in Taub, the land has to be rendered completely useless or deprived of all economically beneficial use. And the next board I'd like to show, Your Honors, is if you look at this case, you will see exactly what this case looks like. It points out that what Mr. Mayhew wanted was a 500% profit on the current value of his property. The profitability is not guaranteed. He agreed to go down to 300% profit, but no lower.
Are you coming to the answer to my question?
Yes.
Okay.
So, yes, Your Honor, the answer to the question was the trial court saw that because the plaintiffs testified that their highest and best economic use and profit was at 3 to 5 times the density for multiple family and for single family. Remember, they wanted 50 to 200 single family units even in their application.
Let me clarify my question. One of the questions we have to decide is whether any profitable use of property was denied without advancing a legitimate governmental interest. And what I'm asking is, why did the trial court determine that the governmental interests advanced by the city of Sunnyvale were irrational?
Your Honor, the trial court took the plaintiff's findings of fact, which are not permissible in a case in which one of the justices asked a question, in a case of constitutional law where all issues are legal issues. Findings of fact are impermissible by the trial court. And that case is specifically stated in the Supreme Court of Texas decision. And what the trial court did was to simply cross off the plaintiff's name and sign some 200-plus findings of fact. What the trial court did here was to substitute profitability for loss and diminution of economic value, which is Penn Central, Lucas, Agin, and every case, Taub, that's been decided. Every case shows, Your Honor, look at the current regulations are 1 unit per acre. In order to establish a taking, you must show under concrete pipe, which is the latest U.S. Supreme Court case and your Taub case, that you have been downzoned to where you'd actually have lost close to 90 to 100% of your value. In other words, that you've lost almost all economic value. Instead, what's happened here is the argument has been that because I can't go from 100% to 500%, I have a property interest in this upzoning, which is not true. There is no property interest in an upzoning, and therefore I've been deprived of economic use.
Concerning rankings, though.
Yes, sir.
If they don't want to go low, and the city doesn't want to go that low,
right.
Isn't that a decision?
No, Your Honor, because let's go to the next board. Because what is very critical was that they never applied under the existing regulation.
Well, but I may lose my case, but if I want 3,600 or nothing, and they say no, looks to me like at that point I'm allowed to raise the constitutional issue.
Well, you may raise a constitutional issue, Your Honor, but you can always, anybody can raise the constitutional issue.
I may lose.
Yeah.
But
because
right.
the fact of the matter is that, as this case demonstrates, they had 5 different procedures available to them, all of which were required. Under McDonald, Summers, and Williamson, you must make an application under the existing zoning regulations and be turned down or demonstrate that those regulations do not allow a reasonable use. They never applied under the existing regulations. You must give the town the opportunity. This is separation of powers doctrine. You must give the town the opportunity to review the economic impact upon the town, because if, in fact, you simply allow a grandiose scheme, as McDonald Summers says, to be applied for, the greater the scheme, the more likely the town will turn it down. And then if you simply say you didn't have to apply under the regulations, you didn't have to ask for variance, you didn't have to do anything, go right to court and put every municipality in this state in jeopardy of going through expensive trials. Do you know the attorney's fees alone were $1.3 million?
Well, let's go back. If I heard you a couple of sentences ago, I think you said that, or implied at any rate, that in this situation, the town didn't have a chance to evaluate the economic impact of
this. That's correct.
Well, I don't understand that, because if I recall, it seems as though that the city planners and people who are working for the city worked hand in hand with the Mayhew on the impact this would have on the city, on changing the system and working to get it done. And after they thought they had it done, that's when the town pulled the plug.
No, Your Honor, that's not correct. What actually happened was the Mayhews assembled a team completely different than the town's planning team. They assembled Sasaki from San Francisco, Hammer, Seiler, and George from Washington, D.C., Mr. Seaman came in from Chicago, as well as Lane Kendig. These were not the town planners.
Well, I may have the title wrong, but I thought the title was city planner. Maybe some other title.
The city planner testified. You're right. But let me explain, Your Honor, that the actual amount of land of the plan, the city planner testified that the town was going to grow and would need, would have more population in the future, which contradicted, by the way, the testimony that there was no market. But the Mayhew's tract comprised, he testified, 15% of the vacant developable land in the town, but accounted for 64% of the population increase allocated to the year 2010. So that Mayhew was asking for such an enormous share, such a tremendous upzoning of the property. It was not in conformity with the plan. It was not in conformity with the adequate facilities to service the property or the schools or the, as the Court of Appeals said, the environmental problems of the sewer, of the problems dealing with the permeability of the soil, of the wetlands, of the 400 acres of stream valley and wetlands. He never submitted a plan development application. A plan development requires a detailed plan of what you want to build. He never submitted it one unit per acre. We could never see the economic impact of that. He only submitted it at 5 units to the acre.
So, but what your argument contends is that he would, or any other person in the Mayhew's position, would have to submit what is known unequivocally to be an uneconomical use of the land merely to establish rightness.
Your Honor, it isn't just the plaintiff that makes that determination. The whole purpose of rightness is that because this is an economic constitutional claim, it's saying I've been deprived of all beneficial use of the property. The town also has to make that judgment, and it has to be able to make that judgment.
Why should we require them to submit an application for something they plainly don't want?
Because suppose that they don't want it, Your Honor, but the fact of the matter is that then if they're going to submit something, they have to make a meaningful application in which they, number one, show what the actual application of the zoning occurs on the property, that it does in fact leave no reasonable return.
Why shouldn't we conclude that that requiring them to go through this process longer than they already have would be futile? This is, as I understand, 675 existing residences. The Mayhews want to increase that by 3,600.
That's right.
And you're never going to approve their application. Your client's never going to do that, is it?
That's not so, Your Honor, because we granted new zoning regulations after this case had been concluded at the trial court, which increased the zoning up to 1.8 units per acre. We almost doubled the density of the land. Mr. Seaman disagrees with that, but that is in effect, and he introduced the new ordinance into the record. Your Honor, we could have given variances. Special uses were applicable for shopping centers and for motels and for multiple family uses. There was intermediate zoning of 1 to 3 units per acre, never applied for it, never asked for it. Let me show you this other board, Your Honor.
The issue is rightness, though. And
yes, that's what these are.
Was there a decision made? Did it get square so that you can go to court over it?
No.
As opposed to, were you just sort of dreaming one day and you thought, well, this would be nice, and the people never really came to issue.
That's exactly right.
How can it be from this record that the town of Sunnyvale didn't come to issue with these developers
because
over this subject?
No, the only thing we came to issue with them on was 5 times the upzoning. That's all. Now, all we're saying
that's
not the constitutional issue of taking. As Williamson said, Williamson had a similar thing. It had 600 acres, 600 units, 1 unit per acre. They
applied. They may lose their taking. They may or they may
well,
not.
Well, no, but the Williamson...
But why isn't this right?
Because the Williamson court said, even though that was 1 unit per acre, and they applied for 1,800, okay, but the current zoning was 1 unit per acre, they had to ask the town, okay, for some intermediate relief, something that would give them enough to have a reasonable beneficial use, less than the grandiose scheme that they're required.
So
they must
so
give
so
that opportunity.
So it isn't right unless the plaintiff has a winning case.
It isn't right unless the plaintiff can demonstrate that he has asked for, okay, meaningful relief, okay, from the ordinance which would give him a beneficial use or economic use on the property. He cannot just come in with something that is so broad, because if that happens, then it will be denied and litigation will follow.
But their testimony was that that was the only economic use if they considered other uses, and anything below that
would not be economic. They said that they applied but for the minimum. Doesn't that get them over the rightness threshold? They may lose.
No, it doesn't, Your Honor, because the thing that's critical about the rightness is that it has to be the government, the local government, the legislative body has to have the opportunity to view the development, to see what meaningful relief can be granted on the development, to make that determination in order to avoid the idea that they will be dragged into litigation or suffering from this, or that every property owner can come in and ask for this kind of relief without going through the process of demonstrating that their own application is not leaving an economic use.
What is to prevent, I think, a concern that the courts would have that the local city could just wear out any applicant? Well, we're not turning you down exactly, but if you change this or come back with this or modify this, we might look at it differently. And time goes by, and
sure,
it's getting harder and harder to look at it differently.
That's right. You know, Your Honor, there is, I'm not saying to you that there's 14 applications out there that they have to make. They have to run through the mill on every single application. There was no reason why they couldn't even have consolidated their application with their PD. Remember, PD is an upzoning. It is a legislative determination, same thing that you faced in Tao. It is basically a discretionary upzoning regulation. It could have been denied, and that would have been the end of it. In order to prove a taking, in order to prove substantive due process, they have to show that they, number one, asked the town for meaningful economic relief, not just the proposal.
How many does it they have to ask for? Would one of them be enough? Would two, three? Would they have to ask for each one until they had shown that they had been
denied? No, they could ask in a comprehensive single application. They could have asked.
So how many of those factors would they have had to have included in the application? One, two, three, all of them to show, in your view, rightness?
Well, Your Honor, if you take the position, and what we're saying is that they could have, if they have methods available.
What if they asked for zoning? Would you say, no, come back and ask for a variance? No, come back and ask for special
No, we're not.
How many of those would they have to run through before,
no,
in your mind?
We're not saying they have to be seriatim, Your Honor. What we're just saying is they could be brought together. They could be brought as a package where they come before the board and they say, look, one unit per acre is unconstitutional. Here, we're showing you the site plan which shows that we cannot make an economic return. Now, we're asking you for meaningful relief. Would you give us some form of special use or variance or something else so that we can get up to some use that is meaningful or economic? But to simply come in, as McDonald Frady said, to come in with a large, grandiose schema, not ask for the intermediate zoning. Could I see the other board, please? I want to show you this. It's very, very critical. Because Mayhew 1 asked the question and said that they made multiple applications between 1.0 and 2.93 dwelling units.
Have you got any evidence in the record that would show?
And then, right, and then...
No, excuse me. Do you have any evidence in the record that would show that something less than they asked for is economically viable?
Your Honor, we demonstrated in the record, okay, that 1.0 is economically viable. They paid $300,000 for the land, and their own appraiser testified the land was worth more than $2 million at the current zoning. So that's six times what they invested as a reasonable investment-backed expectation. That's in the record. So the question that Mr. Seaman is saying is, we don't think that's an economically viable use. The Court of Appeals specifically stated that the fact of the matter was that the record shows that they had an economically viable use. They were not downzoned. They had economically viable use from what they wanted. But beyond that, Your Honor, look, when Mayhew 2 said, the trial testimony simply shows that this is what Mr. Mayhew testified. 3,500 dwelling units was the minimum number of units that was economically feasible as a planned development. He didn't say as economically beneficial use under the taking standard. And he said anything less than 3,600 units the developers had requested would be treated by the developers as an outright denial. This is not a rightness case from the town's perspective. There's no futility here. It was the plaintiffs that turned their back on any other relief. It was the plaintiffs who told the town, we won't even consider your other remedies, or we won't even ask for what the Court of Appeals reversed the summary judgment.
Excuse me a second. Let's go back to a fact and a piece of law. First of all, a legal contention made by the petitioner that was reflected on the previous board that they argue and provided case law supporting it, that your rezoning is, as a matter of law, establishes futility. What's your response to that?
Not at all, Your Honor. Because the...
So the cases they cited were incorrectly cited?
That's correct.
Okay.
Because there are, as you can see from the previous board, futility means that we've told them you cannot come back and seek other relief, an intermediate zoning or a bare civil. We never told them that.
Okay, then what about the factual contention that basically as soon as this plan was denied, there were several moratoria established where, in essence, they had no viable opportunity to present anything new before a lawsuit was filed here. I accept the concept that there were a couple of windows, but very small windows. What's your position in answer to the fact that your client established moratoria that prevented them from reapplying?
Number one, Your Honor, the moratoria that was established was only for PD upzoning applications. Did not apply to variances, special uses, development under the existing regulations, and as pointed out by the Court of Appeals, allowed for from July of 1987 to May of 88 an application to go forward even under PD. And finally, it was not applied to either the Mayhews or the Luxons because they're claiming futility, but they certainly never applied. I'd like to close.
Excuse me, Counselor, your time has expired.
Yes, I have one more question.
Yes.
Should I answer, Your Honor?
As long as there's questions, you can answer.
Okay.
But you're on our time now.
That's fine.
One of your earlier comments was that with regard to these constitutional issues, we are not bound by what happens below. We can make our own determination about whether or not this is or is not constitutional. Is that pretty much your position?
That's correct. Now, these are questions of law.
My question is, in light of the Court of Appeals ruling, factual insufficiency on some of the issues, is it your position that if the court were to go along the route of saying that the matter was right, that we and in fact should make a ruling as a matter of law with the current fact situation on the issue of takings?
That's right, Your Honor. We don't think that's in other words, we believe that the pool ruling and the cases cited by the petitioners here, the plaintiffs, are cases which do not deal with constitutional issues. They deal with fraud, civil rights, etc., where there is a traditional review of a trial court bench trial. In a case of a constitutional claim, there is no, all of those issues of constitutionality are matters of law. They are de novo, reviewed by the Court of Appeals and by the Supreme Court. And the fact of the matter is that while the pool findings that the Court of Appeals made in this case are certainly illustrative of how they reached the legal conclusions that they reached with regard to the constitutional issues and give the background of that, they are, in my opinion, Your Honor, that there is no pool that should be applied to these constitutional issues.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel.
Your Honors, I'd like to make it absolutely clear that I believe that if you read the Supreme Court of the United States decisions, you will find that all that's required is one application. It has to be meaningful, and once it's decided, the matter is right for constitutional adjudication. The plaintiff may not prevail in proving that there's no economically viable use where he has not asked for lesser. He bears the risk of proving that 3600.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
In the CA opinion, they quoted from Williamson versus Hamilton Bank that generally a decision requires at least one of the plan and two denial of that.
You will find that what the court in Williamson found was that the ordinance under which the application was applied for in Williamson required that if a variance was necessary to carry out the subdivision, that the property owner bore the obligation to get the variances before he applied. Otherwise, he wouldn't be eligible for approval. I read Williamson to say you have to file a meaningful application, and if variances are necessary for that application to be acceptable, you must apply for those variances. And in that case, the property owner failed to do so, his application was not meaningful, and so the decision to reject it wasn't a decision to reject it because they weren't going to allow any use of the property. It was to reject it because he failed to provide a meaningful application.
Does meaningful depend on the quality, detail of the application, or on the nature of the use requested?
I believe it has to do with the eligibility for approval under the requirements of the code under which it's granted. For example, in this case, the application was under a PD. It established 15 separate standards. Every bit of testimony in the record, including the town's planner, was that this application satisfied each and every requirement, and therefore, I believe it was right. Meaningful means it's eligible. I would like to point out,
no matter what the use requested was,
I believe,
as long as they touch all the bases, meet all the requirements, then issue the joint.
Right. And at that point, Your Honor, you may not succeed on your constitutional claim, but it's right. I would draw this court's attention to Penn Central, which is probably the leading case. In Penn Central, the source of this language, the grandiose plan, I would ask this court to look at the record and before you judge Mayhew's as a grandiose plan consistent with the existing homes. Most of the existing homes in the town, those 600 some odd homes, are built on more intensive lots, smaller lots than was proposed for the Mayhew property. But in Penn Central, the property owner applied for one permit to build a 50-story building over Grand Central Station. It was denied and he went to court. The case was right. The Supreme Court of the United States found that he had failed, the property owner failed to demonstrate their taking claim because they were unable to prove that the 50-story building was a minimum economically beneficial use and that some less than that might still be beneficial. We are the ones who bear the burden of proof. In this case, we demonstrated.
How do you respond to his comment about the evidence that the land is much more valuable even as a one-acre residential?
Your Honor, that's not what the evidence shows. And I would respond to this by saying it's not an abstract issue of whether an appraiser can assign a value. Would a reasonable, prudent investor buy this? The constitutional standard of economically viable use theory is not what property rights are grounded on. And it's that diminution value which the judge listened to, Judge Hartman listened to all the evidence and concluded that no reasonable investor would pay any money for this land and that the regulations went too far.
Counsel,
I would like to make...
Is it your position that there is no economic benefit to owning land that in 8 or 10 years might be very profitable?
I believe that the Constitution judges property according to its current value. And if you read the Lucas case, you'll find...
Doesn't that go into its current value?
Your Honor, I don't believe under the holdings of Lucas. I think the public record will reflect that I've argued that it should in the case, but the Supreme Court of the United States rejected my argument.
Counsel, assuming... we agree with you on the ripeness issue. Why shouldn't we render judgment for one side or the other? What is to be gained by a retrial? Is there any other evidence that either you or your adversary has not been able to make part of this record?
Your Honor, if I accept the hypothesis that has been advanced by my opposing counsel that this is the takings claims, all the constitutional claims are essentially legal questions, then I would concede this court's jurisdiction to de novo review the record, and I believe if you do, even on the mere words of it, you could come to no conclusion other than to render judgment in my client's favor. And given my earlier remarks about justice delayed as justice denied, I would pray the court do so. I think I've also been honest and plain that I believe that these are essentially factual questions. I believe that's ultimately for this court to decide, but I would gladly accept an affirmance of Judge Hartman's
judgment. Any other questions? Thank you,
that concludes the argument and the first call. The court will take a brief recess.
The audience will please rise.